Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. I'm your host, Callie Fell. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with four-time surrogate mother, Alicia Wood. Having wonderful pregnancy experiences with each of her four children, Alicia felt that surrogacy was an obvious way for her to help others start or even build their own families. She's here today to talk about her different experiences as a surrogate mother. Welcome to Venus Rising, Alicia.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. We love having women come on and tell their stories because I think that's the best way for other women to navigate family building, right? Is for us to share stories.
Yes, exactly.
So before we begin, will you tell me just a little bit about you and your family? Maybe, you know, how you heard about surrogacy or how you found out about surrogacy or your own family?
My name's Alicia and I have four kids and I live in Northern California and I've always loved being pregnant. It's always made me feel good and I'm always healthier when I'm pregnant. It's a great thing to do. And I started to look into surrogacy after I had my first child. But once my husband and I met, we wanted to wait until we had our own children to start surrogacy just in case something happened. You know, we wanted to have our family first. So after I had my three kids, we decided to look down that route of having the journey of being a surrogate.
So you already had this in the back of your mind before you even started your own family?
Yes. Yeah. After my first, I had such an enjoyable pregnancy that I'm like, this is definitely something I would want to. I saw something online talking about surrogacy, help a family become, you know, part of this journey. And so back when I had my first, I started thinking about it.
Wow. Do you remember where you saw that or where, do you recollect your...
It was just like a Google search, you know, like something popped up or someone had mentioned it. And that kind of piqued my interest of.
Sure, sure. I know some of my friends or colleagues within a certain age group are starting to see even advertisements for this sort of thing, like on Facebook or Instagram. And so that's becoming a more popular way of people seeing these types of things. So interesting. So you've been a surrogate four times. That's quite, and so you've been pregnant eight times. Is that right?
Yes, I have.
Wow. That's a lot of pregnancies. You must really, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. People are like, oh, are you pregnant again? Is this one yours or someone else's?
Oh, wow. Okay. So let's start there then. Like, how does that make you feel? Did you feel a difference between your own biological pregnancies and your surrogate pregnancies? Did you feel that people viewed you a certain way or differently?
Yes. Like with your own, they're so excited for you, you know, normally with your first two. And then when you are on three and four, they're kind of like, oh, is this your last one, you know? And then when I said I was a surrogate, a lot of people, like, oh, you're so sweet to do that. And then most of the time they're like, well, how much are you getting paid? Wow. That's kind of the first question I would get, like, oh, I hear you make a lot of money doing it, you know, which kind of throws you off. Like, well, that's not just, you know, the main thing is making money. I mean, for some people, yes, it is. But for me, I know a few people who've had infertility problems and can't get pregnant. So that also like made me want to help as well to bring a baby to the family.
So I'm going to stop you there really quick because you bring up a lot of points, actually. So for your surrogacy experiences, were you paid for each of them? Or did you know a friend? Were these altruistic? For our listeners who are listening in, there are many ways to be a surrogate. The most common way currently is through commercial gestational surrogacy, where women are paid to be a surrogate for another woman. But There are other ways, such as traditional surrogacy, where a woman uses her own egg, or altruistic surrogacy, where she isn't paid. She's just doing it out of the kindness of her heart. So could you speak to, were all four of yours a certain type of surrogacy, or let's talk about that for just a second. You don't have to go into how much you were paid and that sort of thing, but just kind of talk about the logistics behind your particular arrangements.
For me, I was a gestational surrogate. So it was nothing of my egg. It was all their embryo. So for me personally, I wouldn't be able to be a traditional surrogate using your own egg, because for me, that was a part of me.
Yeah, it seems like it's your own child, right? You'd be selling or give away your own child. Yeah,
exactly. And so for me, I would have been able to do that as a gestational surrogate. I could do that. I did get paid different amounts, you know, depending how much each one could afford. And I did go through an agency with each one. Each surrogacy journey I went through was different parents.
I see.
None of the same.
I see. Were any of those parents international, or did you do all local?
Yeah. The first two was actually international. One was in China and one was from Singapore. And okay. The other two were local, about 2 hours away from where I'm at.
Okay. Are you in contact with any of those parents or children to this day?
Yes, I do. I get updates. We text, we send pictures, we FaceTime. So I'm like the great aunt that kind of lives away, you know, that you talk to occasionally, but we text and I get pictures. It's great. I love still having communication with all of them.
So you have communication with all four parents and children?
Sorry, the three of them. The first one ended up in a miscarriage, and I can go with that later if you want, but three of them I'm in contact with.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess that would probably be the best start. I know we kind of like ran into this full steam, but you brought up some really important points. So let's talk about your first surrogacy.
Okay. The first surrogacy, you don't know what to expect. You do as much research as you can, you know, and information. You do get an agent, you know, surrogacy agent who kind of walks you through process and meds and injections. And that one started off great. The transfer, it took first time, which sometimes it takes one or two transfers of the embryo. But with me, each time I've transferred, it's taken one time. But this time I got extremely sick. Hypermesis gravidarum, HG. I know a lot of people are more aware of it since Kate Middleton had it. Mm-hmm. I got extremely sick, which I've never had that experience with any of my own children. So it's kind of taken aback. I had lost 20 pounds in probably about 2 weeks.
Wow. At a time where you're generally gaining weight, right?
Exactly. I was so sick, just throwing up, you know, 10, 15, 20 times a day. I was admitted as like an outpatient of a hospital. So I was in there every day getting fluids and meds for 3-4 hours every single day. So it was not what I expected at first. Mm-hmm. It was a lot to take on for my family as well. You know,
right. You have four little ones. I mean, I don't know how old they would have been at the time, but yeah.
Yeah, I had four children to take care of. And my husband actually had to take time off of work for a month to take care of me. So it didn't start off easy. And unfortunately, once I stopped the meds, about 13, 14 weeks, because you take shots to hold on to the baby for the hormones, the progesterone. Unfortunately, we miscarried. I went in for an ultrasound and the baby had no heartbeat. And so we ended up inducing and I had to deliver him vaginally, you know, so that was kind of rough to do. And the parents were in China, so they weren't able to come, you know, be there. So it was, you know, not the ideal first surrogacy.
Oh, no. And I'm sorry, how many weeks were you? I didn't catch.
I was about 14 weeks.
Wow. Yeah. That's really hard.
Yeah. You know, and you feel you let them down and, you know, have this chance. And so.
But also for you, I mean, that's a loss too, right? Like, even just going through that emotional process and losing a baby. But yeah, that's a lot to kind of work through and process.
Mm-hmm. Luckily, through the agency, they have psychiatrists that if anything happens, because you have to go through a lot of, you know, ultrasounds and psychiatrist appointments, you know, to make sure that you can handle doing surrogacy. So luckily, I had that support for afterwards to talk to her, talk through things about what happens. And it was luckily I had a good support system to help me, you know, go through it.
Yeah. So then from there, how long did you wait before deciding to do this process again?
I waited about 6 months to let my body heal. And, you know, probably most people would stop and be like, maybe this isn't for me. But for me, I felt like I would like let someone down. And I really wanted to accomplish, you know, giving a family a baby.
Mm-hmm. Did you stay in contact for a little bit of time with the couple in China or the internet?
I did a little bit, but the agency, they couldn't speak English. We had a language kind of barrier. And so we kind of emailed each other back and forth more than, you know, FaceTime. So we didn't stay in contact that much after it happened.
I see. Did they ever make you feel a certain way? I mean, I'm just hearing you say, you know, you felt like you let them down, but how did they respond to that?
They didn't have a lot to say, you know, they didn't have, and I think we didn't have a close relationship like I have with the others, you know, intended parents. I think just they lived in China. I couldn't see them. They weren't there with me. So I think the experience was kind of not, I don't think they really truly understand what the whole process of delivering and the miscarriage. I mean, of course they felt lost because they lost their own child, you know, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. But they weren't there personally with me through the pregnancy. So it was a lot different because it was international.
Okay. So 6 months in down the road and you're thinking about doing this again.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use the same agency? What do you do the same? What do you do differently?
Okay. The agency after that kind of was like, well, I think we're not a good match, which kind of not like hurt my feelings, but kind of was like, oh, that was it. Like, you're just kind of, you're done. You tried one. And so I actually went through a different agency, and this one was from Singapore, and we had a great, because you always do a Zoom meeting just to see like, are you guys good match? Do you guys believe in the same things? Are you, it's, and it went really well. I was kind of hesitant because it's another international family. And so, but we went ahead and they actually transferred 2 embryos because she only had 2 left, which is a risk because you don't know those could split and you could have 4.
Mm-hmm.
But,
how did that make you feel? Were you like up for carrying multiples knowing that that's also high risk or?
Yeah, I just kind of felt like, why not? You know, I already had a, you know, I didn't know what to think, you know, cause mm-hmm. I just wanted to produce, you know, be able to carry a baby for someone. So I'm like, hey, it's a better chance putting 2 in instead of 1, mm-hmm. you know, and I know one of the qualities of the embryos were not the best. They're like, they probably won't even take because they grade the embryos of how well grades they were. So one was really good and the other mm-hmm. one wasn't. So we did the transfer and both of them took. And so I was pregnant with twin girls. And about 13 weeks when we stopped the meds again, one of them passed.
Okay.
So that was another little shocker, was going to the ultrasound and, you know, up to that point with two little girls and then one had no heartbeat. And they're like, well, at least one took. We were surprised that they even both took in the first place. One of them.
Did it feel kind of like a little bit of a flashback being about the same gestational age that like, oh no, you know, am I going to lose both? You know what I mean? Like, did you feel that same feeling of loss that you felt the first time?
I did. It was just kind of a shocker, mm-hmm. like, oh no, like one of, you know, and I was already so nervous about getting to that week, you know, the second trimester, but that's also when we stop the hormone. So your body knows whether your body knows if something's wrong with baby. Mm-hmm. And so once the hormones was keeping baby going. And so we stopped the hormones, and one of them that wasn't strong or wasn't supposed to, you know, something was wrong. And I don't want to be harsh about it, you know, about they're just happy that one of them survived. And so once we saw the heartbeat and the baby, after that, I had just a great pregnancy. I had a great pregnancy otherwise, besides, you know, at ultrasound, you would see two babies, one bigger than the other. And my body just absorbed it after, you know, a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So we didn't have to do anything to go in or, but yeah, it was kind of hard.
to see that. Yeah. So this baby you delivered, and pretty uneventful pregnancy, uneventful delivery then.
Yep. Had a great pregnancy. Everything was good. Cause I've never had, well, after the first pregnancy, but I've never had high blood pressure or gestational diabetes. So after that, I had a perfectly normal pregnancy, gained the normal 15 to 20 pounds. She came exactly on our due date, and mom just made it because she just flew in. I called her. She was just flying into San Francisco, actually. And she landed. And then I called her and I'm like, I'm in labor. So she like didn't even sleep. It was like a 15-hour flight and drove up to us, which was about 2.5-3 hours from San Francisco. And she made it in time, was in the delivery room and was able, she recorded it, she videotaped it, and then cut the cord and held her for the first time. It was a great, great experience. It was pretty amazing being, you know, seeing the look on her face when I handed the baby to her.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about that. Like the first time that you're giving someone else a baby that you have grown and nurtured and loved and taken care of. Like, did you feel bonded at all to this little one? Or talk to me about that.
I really didn't, because it's hard to describe, because yes, you've grown, you know, you've seen your belly move, you know, baby moving around, and you've been taking care of yourself or the baby, but just seeing her face, seeing her baby for the first time is just priceless. And I didn't feel like, oh no, that's mine. You know, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. You know, first of all, the baby didn't look anything like me. And we actually brought my kids so they could see that as well. You go in knowing this is someone else's baby. You know, I have four of my own and I was done. So, you know, you love the baby, but not in the sense it's my baby. Hard to explain.
No, you did a great job explaining it. So let's move on then to your other two surrogacies. These are more local. Talk us through each of those, because I know these were a little bit different, right? Or your experience was a little bit different. So let's talk about those.
Yeah. So my third surrogacy, did the transfer, and it took the first time. We knew it was a boy. And, you know, the mom was able to come to doctor's appointments with me, ultrasound. So we were so much more involved, which was really nice, you know, talking on the phone and meeting up together. And pregnancy went great. And then all of a sudden at 34 weeks, I just started having contractions. Then I went to the hospital and they're like, no, you're like 2 centimeters, you're fine. And sent me home. And I'm like, no, I know the difference. And about 2 hours later, I go back down and I'm 7 centimeters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I delivered him, and the parents unfortunately did not make it in time. So that was a little different, not having the parents there.
Do you have support? Was your husband there with you, or your partner there with you?
My mom. I just like having my mom.
Yeah, no, I'm a mama's girl myself, so I understand how that is.
Yeah, she was there with the first and the second surrogacy, so she was here for the third. And so she was there. Baby boy was 5 pounds, 9 ounces for being 6 weeks early and 19.5 inches long. So he was a good size, like early one, you know?
Yeah, that is. That's a long baby.
Yeah. And so it went great. And they came up the next day and he was in the NICU for just a little bit. And I was able to pump milk for him and send it to the NICU. And I just stayed for 24 hours and then they released me. And then I would go back and visit him and see them. And it went great. And I actually pumped for them for 8 months.
Wow. Did you pump for the other baby even just for a short time?
Yeah, I pumped for her and actually breastfed her. She actually wanted me to breastfeed her when I was in the hospital with her, which, you know, she was the one who was like, would you mind? I'm like, sure, why not? You know, at first my mom was a little wary of me being attached because I was breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. But you're not because you're so tired and you're just like, I'm just helping baby have the best milk and colostrum, you know, best start that they can. So I pumped for her for 2 months while they were still here in America until they flew out to Singapore.
Gotcha. And
so yeah, I pumped for all of them.
And okay. So, okay. Yeah. I recently talked to a bunch of surrogate mothers and that was something that interestingly mothers who pumped for babies seem to be a little bit more mentally well off, if I to say it that way. Women who didn't end up pumping or providing milk, they went home and their bodies kind of had this response, so to speak, of where's the baby, you know, and having to bind breasts and keep that milk from flowing. So that's just an interesting, anecdotally anyway, thing I like to ask or talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. And so I think, yeah, it helps your body, you know, just get back to normal how it should be. And it wasn't too hard to stop for the first one and the second one. The second one, it's a lot of work to pump. I don't know if you pump, but it's a lot.
I have not, but I, you know, being a labor and delivery nurse, I know that sometimes, especially with premature babies, we do this protocol of what's called triple feeding, where you're feeding them, you're pumping, you're feeding them, you're pumping, you know. So I do know that it is a lot of work. So, but important work. A lot of hospitals are really starting to realize how important, you know, colostrum and that first milk is for babies. So, so let's move into your last surrogacy. How long ago was that, Alicia?
I had him 6 weeks ago.
Oh, wow. So very recent. I didn't realize it was that recent.
Yes. So it's very fresh still.
Yeah. And how long from your second surrogate baby or third surrogacy pregnancy from, like, so you waited 6 months from the first to second, like kind of give us a timeline real quick.
Yeah. The first one, when I miscarried, I took about 6 months before I did the first one, and she is going to be 4 in May. And then my second little guy, little Pharaoh baby, he will be 3 in September of this year. And so it's about a year.
Okay.
Give or take. And then this one, little guy was just born February 21st. Yes. And so.
That one was a couple.
Yeah, a little bit more spaced out. But I also was pumping for 8 months with the third surrogacy.
Sure.
So we waited. But you want to talk about the last?
Yeah. Let's talk about your fourth and final. Are you done?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
My last one.
Okay. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So this one went good. Well, it was a little different because of COVID. We had to cancel 2 transfers because of COVID and things down and not allowing kind of elective, well, not surgery, but elective transfers. We'll just say transfers. So it was canceled twice. And so the third time we transferred was to try again. And baby took the first time. Everything went good, nice and smooth. And so the pregnancy was great. They are local too. So, but they were unfortunately not able to come to any ultrasounds or doctor's appointment because of COVID.
Because of COVID, yeah.
Yeah. So it was another different surrogacy, to say the least. And they couldn't be there for transfer either. So the week prior, I went to my doctor's appointment. And that Monday, I had high blood pressure at my doctor's regular visit, which I've never had high blood pressure before. But my mom had had a heart attack that weekend. So I just figured, oh, it's just my stress. And they're like, well, let's just send you to labor and delivery just in case to make sure your blood pressure comes down. So I ended up being admitted. My blood pressure was like 150 over 110. So it was high.
Very high. Yeah.
Yeah, which I normally have really low, like 117 over 68. That's like my normal. So they admitted me for 4 days. So that was a surprise, but I didn't have high blood pressure. I had hypertension because I didn't have like protein in my urine. I had no swelling. I'd only gained 5 pounds the whole pregnancy. And so I didn't meet all the other criteria.
How many weeks pregnant were you at this point?
That point I was at 33 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, so they released me. And so I got to go home on Thursday. And then that Saturday I was in bed, just woke up, and I went over to lean over to pet my cat. And I felt this gush. I'm like, oh no, that's my water. It's too early again. And I felt it, and it was just blood. And so I yelled to my husband and like, babe, you got to get in here and keep the kids out. And so a friend came and watched the kids. And then we hurried down to the hospital. Baby was still doing great on the monitor. They got me in right away, hooked me up. And I wasn't having really any contractions, but they checked me and I was like 5 centimeters dilated.
Wow.
So they're like, just letting you know, with the bleeding and everything, we will probably have to do an emergency C-section. We might just have to put you under, you know, just wanted to prepare you, have you in your mind, this is what would be happening. So I called the mom, you know, so she came to the hospital and she was able to come in, thankfully. And I hadn't told her everything until she got in there because I didn't want to scare her as she was driving. So I was just like, I'm having some contractions. You probably want to get here. Yeah. And so she was great, you know, the whole thing. So the bleeding stopped. Contractions were like every 10 minutes, just very sporadic. And then she went to a hotel to stay. And then about 10 p.m. at night, that Saturday night, I started having a pop and a gush again. And they didn't know what was going on. And the doctor's like, okay, I'm going to call it. If you do that one more time, we're done. You know, we're going to do a C-section and, or if baby's in distress. But this whole time, baby's doing great. And then I just started dilating. And it was just a weird delivery. No real consistent contractions. I mean, they had IVs ready, they had blood ready, you know, they were all ready. You know, NICU came down, the whole team came down. Luckily, the week prior when I was there for the blood pressure, they gave me steroid shots just in case. So I'm so glad we did that.
And for real quick, for listeners who aren't familiar with steroid shots, these are shots that are given to women who might be delivering early, maybe because of blood pressure that they have to take baby out early or preterm. These are steroids that are given to help baby's lungs develop a little bit quicker, just in the off chance that they're delivered early. So it sounds like they gave you those, which is good.
Yeah. They're not fun, of course.
No, they sting real bad.
They do. They do not feel good.
Yeah. But not as bad as progesterone shots. You know, those ones, I hate giving progesterone shots. I feel so bad for moms when I have to give those.
Yes, you get used. I mean, I don't think you ever get used to them because you have to do them for 14 weeks in your back every day. And the estrogen as well. So it's like 2 shots in your back. Like every day.
Anyway, so
I decided at that time to maybe do like an epidural. The nurse suggested, she's like, how about we just do an epidural? Because it's going to happen fast. And if we have to do C-section, we'd rather have everything ready to go.
Sure. And then that way they don't have to put you under, right? They can use epidural for the anesthesia. Yeah,
exactly. And it wasn't that I needed it because it wasn't like that painful because they were so sporadic. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, yeah, whatever you suggest. So we did the epidural, but then it only worked on half my body.
Oh no.
And which was fine. So Sunday because they were saying they're not going to stop the labor, but they're also not going to encourage it. But by that time I was like 7 centimeters. So they're like, baby's coming, you know, and we'd rather him come naturally than C-section. So mm-hmm. Sunday we decided the doctor to break my water. And so baby came about an hour afterwards. The delivery was fine. At first I pushed him out and I literally like sat up and pushed once and he was out.
Yeah.
Because he's so tiny. He was 4 pounds, 5 ounces.
Wow. And you've done this a time or two. So your body knew exactly what to do.
Exactly. And he came out screaming and crying. And so he had great lungs. He was like an 8 and a 9 on the Apgar. Is it Apgar?
Oh, yeah, Apgar. That's correct. Yeah.
And so he had 8 and 9. So he did great. They didn't have to help him breathe at all. Like they didn't have to do anything. He was doing mm-hmm. little champ. So the mom and him went up to the NICU to check him out and everything. And that's when things started for me, was the doctor started getting concerned because I started bleeding and couldn't stop. And so that's when they started packing me mm-hmm, mm-hmm. on my stomach, trying to get it to stop. At one point I had probably about 8 people in my room. No one was there because my husband was home, because I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. So my mom couldn't be there because of COVID. So I was by myself and it was very tough because the epidural had worn off and wasn't really working. And so, you know, I felt everything, you know, they kept trying, you know, they come in and do your drawing your blood. They started another IV. It took them 3 times and then an anesthesiologist had to put it in because they kept blowing my veins. It was just, I was shaking. It was.
And meanwhile, you're probably afraid, right? Like you're nervous or thinking about your kids and your, you know, like all the things that happen in an emergency, you know, on top of the pain and discomfort.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like, is this really happening? You know, isn't what, you know, and he's talking, my doctor's like, okay, I might just have to go in for a hysterectomy. Like I can't stop the bleeding. I don't know if this is from the bleeding previously. He checked the placenta. There was no placental abruption. He's like, everything looks perfect. Like everything looks good. I don't know what's going on. You know, I don't know where it's coming from. It's like, we might just need to go in and take everything out, you know, which I'm like, that's fine. I'm done having kids anyways. You know, I'm kind of close to 40. So why not? You know, I can, you know, with menopause, you know, all these thoughts are going in my head while I'm trying to like breathe through everything and trying to stay really strong and not like cry, I whimper. You know, I had no meds in me and I had everything going on. You know, I was shaking. They were wrapping blankets around me, trying to stop the shaking and trying to get blood pressure because it was up and down. And they had to do my calf to get my blood pressure, you know, when it's very high. And at kind of a calm point, my nurse was like, do you want me to call your husband? And I'm like, yes, please. You know, I've been the whole time, I'm like, I just want my husband here, you know, but I was just shaking. I couldn't talk, you know. So she called my husband and she's like, she's okay. Because of course, my panic's my husband, not knowing why the nurse is calling. And then once I heard his voice, that's when I lost it. Like I was totally fine up until I heard his voice. And then I just started sobbing, you know, I just started crying and trying to tell him just to come down here, you know. So we got his friend to come watch the kids and drove down. And lucky he got there very fast. And so he was there when the doctor's like, hey, I'm going to give an hour. If you're still bleeding, we're going in, you know? So at least my husband was there while that hour away, trying to calm my nerves and be like, everything's okay. And luckily after an hour, it stopped. And so my doctor's like, hey, we're going to keep you here in labor delivery. I'm not sending you up to postpartum because if something happens over the night, we need to go in and we need to watch you. And he was actually not even my OB, and he stayed all night till the morning. He was actually mm-hmm. off shift, but he stayed the whole time just to make sure I was okay.
Yeah.
And he'd come in and chat, be like, are you doing okay? You know, like.
Yeah, that's really sweet. That's really great. There's not a lot of physicians like that. So that's good to hear.
No. And so and I didn't. And so I was able to leave 2 days later, which I've never wow. seen the hospital that long before. I've delivered all vaginally. So okay. this was different to stay. Normally I'm gone within 24 hours. Yeah. So I just want to go home. I want to see my children, you know, but I can't have any visitors because of COVID, you know, I can't see my kids. And then could I see my husband? He was able. No, once I went to postpartum, I didn't get to see him because of COVID. It was just during delivery.
COVID's really put a wrench in a lot of things, but that's another topic, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? So do you have any idea how much blood you lost?
I think they said about 2 liters
wow.
of blood. They said I actually had more than normal.
Oh, yeah, that's way more than normal.
like extra, so they didn't have to do blood transfusion because they had everything ready because okay. they were figuring I was going to have blood transfusion. But I guess, I mean, I know normally when you're pregnant, you have more blood anyways, but I had like extra on top of it. I don't know.
Interesting.
So
did you know going into surrogacy that your pregnancies would be more high risk? Were you aware of, I mean, studies are just starting to kind of show that surrogacy pregnancies or surrogate pregnancies are more high risk. They're more likely to end in C-section, preeclampsia, preterm delivery. Were you aware of any of that?
Not really. I don't know if it's just being a naive and thinking, oh, it's just a normal pregnancy. So what's the difference? I think I was more naive, not knowing, you know, you hear some risk, but you're like, also like, it's not going to happen to me kind of in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize that is more high risk until I was there, you know, like
mm-hmm.
when I had the second one at 34 weeks, I thought it was just kind of like a fluke, you know, like why would I have them early? I've always had my babies at 40 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
No, the first one I did right on due date, I didn't realize, I just thought the second one was just going at 34 weeks was just some weird thing. I had a perfect pregnancy. And that's why I also was cleared to have another surrogacy. You have to get cleared by your OB, the RE. There's a lot of tests, you know, checking your cervix. And that's why they allowed me to do another surrogacy. Everything was fine.
Yeah.
And so when this one came at 34 weeks, I was like, okay, I'm totally done doing surrogacy. I would never want a family to go early again like this.
Yeah.
Also for my own health. This one really made me, okay, I'm done. Like this was jeopardized my health and I don't want to risk it for my family. You know, it's not worth risk of doing another one. You know, plus I've had a lot of babies, so my body's done anyway. You know, and then afterwards, I actually ended up getting sepsis.
Really?
Infection. I had 4 different infections since then. Like this week is after the first week I felt good. Like,
really? So did you find that your payment or coverage was enough to cover, you know, so in your miscarriage, sometimes surrogate women don't get paid for a miscarriage. And so it sounds like your husband had to take off a lot of work. And then also in this pregnancy, then with the complications, did payment cover those types of things? Or did you feel, I mean, I know you didn't do it for payment and I kind of know your story, but did it cover it?
They pay for your insurance. So their insurance, you know, covers that, but like my time off work, but I think that's what your monthly is kind of for in a way, but still like I feel bad saying like, oh, the money, you know, like
no, sure. And I know that's not your heart. I know that you want to help people and that's not what I'm trying to get at, but I think it's important that women who go into this thinking, that this could be a way to really boost their finances. Think about this thoroughly in that this is taxable income, for one. For two, this doesn't necessarily cover, you know, you might have to, one time I took care of a patient that had to take off work for several months, right? She was a surrogate. And so her payment, you know, it was great that she was getting paid, I guess, but it took away because she wasn't able to work her job. So it didn't really, in the end, she didn't really end up making much money. I guess that's my point, is that like sometimes women could be lured into this thinking, I will make a good chunk of money, and then it ends up not being what they expect. So that's kind of my point.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. They don't pay for something unexpected like this happening, you know, and I didn't feel right to be like, well, I didn't work for this many weeks, so you should pay more. You know, I never even bothered to ask, you know, like when I, with the first one, I just felt so bad that I didn't even think about, like, I was in the hospital every day, you know, getting fluids. And, you know, I just felt bad. I wasn't even thinking, oh, they should be paying kind of more because I couldn't work anymore. And then my husband had to take time off of work. So like, that's two incomes that we kind of lost out on, you know, if we're talking about like money-wise, it's like, no, like it's not, you know, you get monthly payment, but it's just for that, not if something unexpected comes up, you know, like our bills got paid, which I'm grateful for, you know, the bills from the hospitals, but everything else, you know, time away from your children, you know, you don't get that back. And
right.
Oh no, like mom's going back to the hospital again, you know, when I, with the first one, it was rough, you know, when this time around, I wasn't able to see the kids for a while when I was in the hospital, but that's also due to COVID.
COVID. Different. How did your kids do with you being in the hospital with, it sounds like they had a decent experience the second surrogacy with getting to see that little one, and how did they respond to all that? I know it's hard to always see what's going on in the little one's mind, but did they seem to take it okay? Were they struggling with the idea of this little one going somewhere else now?
No, they were great, you know, because I just explained we're helping a family, you know, someone who couldn't have babies, and they each have come to meet the little one just so they can see and take pictures and like, okay, bye, you know, and they kind of move on. It's just, and then my daughter who's 10 was like, well, mom, just like the other day was like, well, you're going to carry my babies because I am not. So can you do it for me? And I'm like, no, like I'll be so old by then. And so she just figured like, oh, well, you can just carry my babies for me.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And so it's just kind of funny. I'm like, you know, you're going to have your own babies. She's like, or maybe I can ask my sister too. I'm like, you'll see when you're older, like understand it more. Like it just was cute.
Sure. Sure. Well, she saw mom. So, you know, so where do you stand now? Like if a woman was considering surrogacy or thinking about going down this, you know, path or journey, as some call it, what would you say?
I, not to jump to something else, but like, I wish I looked into it more and had more insights or more studies regarding it, because now with what I've been through, it's like, I wonder if there's all the hormones that I was on is going to affect me later down the road, you know, like, will I be more, you know, susceptible to having different cancers, you know, like now, first after the fact, I'm like, oh, maybe I should have looked into it more, but there's no studies to show like, oh, in 10 or 20 years, because of all the hormones, especially since I've done it 4 times, you know, it's like, oh, that might have not been the best choice, you know, like, so I would definitely suggest doing your own research and actual research and talk to other people and different agencies, because some are not good people, who are not looking out for your best interest.
Yeah. And that's what makes it hard, though, because there's not a lot of research. So even if a woman were to Google this, there's a handful of studies, not even, that's being generous, that looks into the long-term effects of these things. And there's a lot of women who are upset that this is happening because it's, you know, we're not looking out for women's best interest.
Yeah. I mean, you really don't find anything. Like, I have myself Googled, like, what is the... Of course, after the fact, but you know, what can happen 10, 20 years later after being a surrogate with all the different meds, so, you know, or try different wording to see if anything really pops up. And it doesn't, you know, nothing really shows what can happen. So it's kind of like, all right, well, I guess we'll wait and see. And, you know, they'll see my history of being surrogate. So maybe they can be like, okay, what, you know, hormones or drugs were you on? So then you can kind of connect things. I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Well, our time is getting very short. I've had you on for quite a while and I really appreciate your time. I know you're very, very busy. Do you have anything else that you would like to add before we leave today? I think I could talk to you for another hour or two. So maybe we'll have to have you back on the show if you're up for it. But is there anything else that you would like to add before we say our goodbyes?
You know, I enjoy that I've been able to share my story and someone maybe can, you know, think more into it of what could happen being a surrogate. It's not all just great things. I mean, it is great things having being able to help a family have a baby is the greatest feeling ever. But then you also have to worry about yourself and what can happen, you know. Mm-hmm. Might have the greatest pregnancies with your own, but it could change with surrogacy. IVF is a lot different than your own.
Yeah. So, There have been mothers who have unfortunately lost their lives because they've chosen to, and in California, a couple recently. So, and that's why we exist at the Center for Bioethics and Culture, is because we aren't afraid to say, hold on, what are we doing? Let's do this safely. Let's stop. Let's pause. Women, children, families are more important. We don't need to exploit people. But anyway, I could go on and on. I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to meet with me and for sharing your story as a surrogate mother. It's invaluable to our listeners. And again, I want to thank each of our listeners. May you continue to think and explore beyond the masses.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.